Session number 23848, Reel 3.
Mr. Wildgust, Reel 3. Right, Mr. Wildgust, you volunteered for the army.
Yeah.
Now, what about your friends and contemporaries? You just turned 18, so had you gone through any kind of process of registering for call-up, or had you bypassed
that? No, I hadn't come yet, because I was only just 18. I did try and get a friend who is now deceased, called Ken Willett, to join up with me, but his father came on the phone and said he had different plans for his son, and he eventually joined the Air Force. Some years later, mind you, about 42 probably. But I sort of do it alone. I mean, you can't influence other people to do what you want to do, and I felt that's what I wanted to do, and I did it.
Now, other veterans have talked, some of the veterans have talked about how they just waited for the process of call-up. When you volunteered for the Army, was that a sense of, you know, making the decision for yourself?
Yeah.
Was that a part of it?
Yeah. I mean, I can't even remember whether there was anybody. I know that some recruiting officers, there used to be people from the RAF and the Navy who used to sort of siphon off what they thought were the cream. But I can't remember ever being that. I had decided to join the Army, and having once sort of got into that room with these these gentlemen, I found I was being carried along by their enthusiasm to a large extent.
Now, they suggested the Sherwood Foresters.
Well, that was the only thing that I could go into because of my age. They said there was a young soldiers battalion being formed with the Sherwood Foresters, with the 70th battalion, and in fact, I think it had only just been formed a week or two, a month or two before, and that was. You said you'll be stationed in Nottingham, and that's where you'll go, young man.
And at the time, the army was just the army.
No,
you're
no.
saying you had
yeah.
no concept of yeah. different arms of yeah. service and so. So, how did the process work from then on? You'd sign on the dotted line, as it were.
Yes, I went on the Saturday and had to go back on the Monday and sign, and that was it. I'd been told to report on the Monday, and I was joined by about, I should think, 30 or 36 other recruits. I would imagine out of the 36, 30 were miners who wanted to get out of the mines. They weren't all my age, mind you, but the strange thing was, of course, by the end of the war, they were all queuing up to get back in the mines. But at the time, the army was preferable to their life than in the mines themselves. And there were six of us who had, without being too snobbish, reasonable educations. There was one from the high school who'd been in the OTC, a guy called Simpkins, big report. And a fellow called Dare, who'd been to Bedford School. I can't remember the others offhand, but we then marched in our civilians from Nottingham London Road through the centre of the town to Waverley Street to the Dolphin Street schools, which had been taken over by the army, and we marched then to the Raleigh Street schools, where we had our first meal, which consisted of a tin plate which had been wiped, I think, by somebody's sleeve, and they put both the main meal and the sweet on the same plate, and it all ran into each other, and I ate it. I mean, I can't remember thinking what an awful mess, but it wasn't exactly the best of meals by any manner of means. And we were billeted in 22 Byrne Street in an old Victorian house which was about three or four stories where we were put on the floor. In fact, we didn't even have biscuits, as they were called. We just was straight onto a wooden floor. There was two blankets, and at that time, of course, we had no uniform. We were still in civvies. But living locally, they let me go home, which I did, just for an hour or so, and had to report back at 23:59 hours. From then on, it was, we were paraded the next day at Dolphin Street Schools, and out of what was a cookhouse came this character called Corporal Prattley, who only had only one adjective, which he continued to use. And the chappie beside me, who had been at the high school in the OTC, looked rather scared. And I said, "Are you glad you joined the army?" And he said, "Well, I wasn't until I heard all this." And he said that going ahead, I met this Prattley by accident after the war. I recognised him, and he was most polite gentleman. He was the market landscape gardener, I think, and was very, very pleasant to talk to. But in his army capacity as a cook, he was his language was pretty rough. Because I mean, we weren't used to that sort of language, you know. We hadn't had the BBC in those days. But they then marched along to see what uniforms they were, and I was fortunate in that I was a sort of stock size and I could have a uniform. But for about a week, it was a mixture. Some of them had tops and ordinary trousers, and some had ordinary shoes and no boots, and some had caps and some didn't. In fact, they were right ragtag. And we were drilled, if you can call it that, on the forest recreation ground where that goose fair, and there it all began.
And what was a typical day during this early phase? You've been issued with you.
Well, we'd go on to the we'd go for drill, which was the main thing at the time. Nobody had rifles. The only time you've got a rifle is when you're on picket duty, which we didn't know what it meant, but virtually guard duty. And you hand them over five rounds of ammunition, which of course was all the British Army could afford in those days, but we didn't know that. And when you went up, when you changed the guard, you had to hand your rifle and five rounds to the next chappie. And when eventually we got, we learnt on what were known as P-14s, which were, I don't know whether they were American or First World War British rifles. They were similar to the Shortley Enfield, but they had a longer protruding barrel. We were also given instruction on the Lewis gun, which of course again was a First World War machine gun, which he spent his time trying to get it to fire. Not that we had any ammunition, because you couldn't afford to let us have it. And then we also had, I can't remember the name now. It was a machine gun with a strip ammunition, which they said had come out of the Spanish Civil War. Whether that was true or not, I don't know. That never worked. And the Lewis gun never worked either. The Bren gun was a long way away at that time. And eventually, after about a month probably, we got Shortley Enfield rifles, and we began to feel we were soldiering at last.
And how long were you in with the unit before you actually got to fire a weapon of any kind?
Well, we were at Dolphin Street Schools and Burn Street in Nottingham for about, October, November. And before Christmas, we moved from there to Bulwell, where we were billeted in an old warehouse, and some were billeted at Bulwell Hall School, Bulwell Hall, which has now been demolished. It's now a golf course, a municipal golf course. But we had to march from the billets in Bulwell itself to Bulwell Hall for our breakfast, which is a good I think it was a good mile and a half, and it was a terribly cold winter, 1940. And it was there that we still hadn't found a land, but it was there that we all had our inoculations, TAB and TT, tetanus, and we were now 24 hours off duty. And the majority of us, including myself, you needed that 24 hours because everybody sort of were fainted, or they got swollen arms and stiff arms. And we still were sleeping on bare boards with two blankets. And it was bitterly cold. The men generally were very easy to get on with. I mean, since the war, I've worked with the miners, and mining community are very friendly people, and they do a lot for each other. They're very good. Well, they're good people to get on with, quite honestly. And we didn't hear any real complaints. We had one or two who worked the ticket. Another story, but.
What do you mean by work the ticket?
Well, we had one in particular who pretended to be a bit daft. He used to gallop on parade as if he was on a horse, and call himself Hopalong Cassidy. And he'd fire imaginary guns, and he'd throw imaginary knives, and he'd attack occasionally people in the dining hall with knives. He also said he murdered a woman in Grimsby, and he used to leave the ranks and gallop around the parade ground until eventually they realised that they had to get rid of him. And the officer commanding the company at the time let him stand beside him and take the march past as he was. He came from Grimsby, Liedl, I think his name was. Somebody told me they met him in Grimsby afterwards, and he admitted, he said, as soon as I joined the army, I realised I made a mistake, so I decided to get out, and he did. But I had one chappy, I remember, shooting his toe off. He said that he was doing a reversed arm. I said, why he was doing a reversed arm when he put the barrel on the toe, you know. I think it was all carefully planned.
So was everybody in the 70th Battalion, was everybody a volunteer, or were some people called up?
No, everybody was a volunteer, this lot.
How did you cope with the army discipline, and what was the discipline in terms of your relationship? NCOs?
It was very strict, and you accepted it because that was the way life was in those days. I mean, if a teacher told you to sit down, you sat down, and if some... he told you to be quiet, you were quiet. With the army, there was no question of arguing. I mean, generally speaking, the NCOs were sympathetic. You know, I mean, they were, I don't say sympathetic, but they didn't try the luck, and they weren't abusive or that sort of thing. They were quite normal, and... I found if you did what you were told, you didn't have any problems at all.
So you didn't feel that you were being kind of, bullied, pushed around unduly?
No, not at all.
What about the food? You mentioned the food on the plate.
I can't really remember much about the food. It's a funny thing because as you get older, at least I am, I mean, I'm particular about the food, and I'm certainly particular about the way people eat. And I was saying the other day, I can't remember ever being worried about... It worries me when I go to a restaurant and see how people eat, particularly kids. And in the army, there must have been some pretty rough eaters, but it didn't sort of went over my head to a certain extent. The food... Well, it was passable. It was reasonable. I mean, that's all you can say. Later on, when we were in Lincolnshire, we were so... hungry, literally, we were really hungry, and I suppose it was all the work we did. And I learned since that being a young soldier battalion, that they were given extra rations, and I don't think the extra rations ever came to us. They went home in cases, etc., etc., but that's never been proved. But no, it was adequate. But it wasn't. I was remembering when I went on leave, I was always glad to think that I was getting rid of the army food and getting proper food inside me again.
Now, you mentioned that your fellow kind of recruit squad members, that you were shocked by educational level to an extent. Yeah. Just talk a little bit more about that. In what way, you know, that there was the six of you that you felt were...
Well...
How did that manifest itself in terms of, you know, friendships?
In no particular way, except they didn't really have any particular standards. I mean, I remember when I was marching through Nottingham, the chap beside me says, "Can you fate, mate?" And I said, what the hell does he mean? He says, "Fate." I said, "What's fate?" He said, "Fight." I said, "What the hell do I have to fight for?" He said, "Oh, you have to fight if you're in the army." He said, "We're going to pub with a girl." He said, "You have to fight to keep her." And I thought, what a strange... a strange thing to say. And of course I did have one fight in the army. Yes, I did have one, but that was a personal thing, and but I never had calls, or never, I can't ever remember seeing soldiers in fights in pubs or anywhere else for that matter. But
so did you all get on, this group?
We got on, but there again, there were enough people there of my own background, if you like, to make it quite normal, like being a school. I mean, as I joined, I mean, there were a fellow called Backshaw, a fellow called Burgess, and he'd been to public school, and Backshaw had been to the high school, and there was a fellow called Holton from... All my friends had similar educations and similar backgrounds, and some of them a damn sight better. And you only mixed with the others socially. Well, you didn't. You went off on your own, and you didn't sort of bother. I mean, it didn't worry me one way or the other. I was quite happy with them in the army, you know, in the barrack room, that sort of thing. That was quite fun.
Now, you say you had a little bit more money in the army than you did in civilian life. How would you spend that money? Had you started to go to pubs and things by this stage?
You didn't have a lot of choice. I mean, you bought cigarettes and you bought a odd pint of beer, and you went to the pictures when you could, and that was about it. I mean, that was total. You didn't save anything. You had nothing to save, really, had you? But somehow he managed to manage, and but as a matter of fact, going ahead a month or two, I found when my mother died, she'd saved all the letters I'd sent to her during the war, and there was one where I'd thanked her for the shilling which she had sent in the letter, because if I hadn't have had that, I couldn't have gone into Grimsby on the bus, which cost me tuppence, and I couldn't have gone to the Tockage and got beans on toast, which cost threepence, and I couldn't have posted a letter to thank her with what she got left, and I'd still got sixpence, I think, over. I mean, that's how it was, and I never got any help from my parents at all, apart from that sort of oddment. And I say, a shilling in those days was a lot. But we then, like I said, we moved to Bull Hall, and it was there. I can't remember when I first had a rifle. It must have been when we moved to Lincolnshire, to Waltham.
Had you had any contact with firearms before the army?
No, never.
And?
No, I haven't. I mean, we knew how to take a rifle and a machine gun apart, and we put it together again. But up to that time, we hadn't.
So they taught you. They taught you to take these things to pieces, but they hadn't actually.
Yeah.
Now, and so you were doing guard. You were doing guard duty, picket duty in this early, with a rifle and five rounds.
Yeah.
So at this stage, could you fire the thing?
No, not at that time.
So you had the rifle, but...
Yes, I can't remember where it was. I wonder who went down to Chul for a day. But I know the first time we fired one round, and we've been told how to do it, and you know, just that first impact was quite comforting in a way, because what it wasn't as bad as they made out of, the kit wasn't as bad as they made it out to be, and eventually you could fire it and not even notice any sort of recoil at all. But
so what were they saying beforehand about the kick?
Well, they said, you know, you must hold the rifle steady, and when you squeeze the trigger, hold your breath, and you squeeze the trigger, you don't pull it, and that sort of thing, and you put the butt well into your shoulder, and when he followed these things, it did what it said it did, you see. And it was always a great surprise to begin with when he finally hit the target, which it was true. But we did have, I remember, the boys' anti-tank rifle, which of course is the world, God's world's worst weapon for the British Army. And there we were allowed to fire one round. And I remember many lads' hats flying off when they fired that, because that had got a kick and a half. But a friend of mine, who was in the forest, at 8th Forest in Norway, a fellow called Frank Cox, he knocked out a German armoured car with the boy's anti-tank rifle. He just happened to hit the sort of join with a turret, which jammed it. But they were retreating then, so he had to throw the gun into the field, and he ran along with the firing bolt in his hand until he threw it away further on. That's, again, neither here nor there. But it was a useless weapon. And there were two useless weapons that the army kitted us out with, but the best one was the rifle, quite honestly.
Now, so you were, and were you taught on the boys at the same time as the Lewis gun?
Well,
and
the one, yes, it came into the.
Now, were you doing route marches in this early training period?
Not really route marches as such. We did a lot of marching backwards and forwards to billets and barracks and so on and so forth. Eventually, I applied or was asked if I would like to take a course of PT, physical training. So I said yes, sir. But they offered me... No, it isn't. That's right. They said, yes, report to the corporal so-and-so, I can't remember his name, on Monday morning, and he'll instruct you in how to do physical training. So I went with another chap. When we got there, this corporal's on leave, and that was the end of that. Then they said, well, you, there's a company being transferred to Grimsby, Waltham, in Lincolnshire, and this platoon is going, and you're to go as physical training instructor. And I said, well, I'm only a private. They said, well, that's all right, you're the physical training instructor. You tell them what to do. And I thought, well, this is very strange. So I thought, what the hell do I do? So I went to the local bookshop and I bought a book on exercises, physical training exercises. Because they didn't offer me anything, and I put this in my kit, and off we went, and we entrained, which is the correct word, at Daybrook Station in Nottingham, and none of us, including myself, had really been used to travelling far. I mean, we'd been used to going to Skegness, and occasionally we'd been to London, but to get onto a train to go to a place like Grimsby, it was quite an adventure, and it was far beyond what we had ever expected. And I remember it did a circuit tour around Nottingham and went up to Ollerton and through Sherwood Forest, and eventually we arrived in Grimsby, where we were then put on buses to a village called Waltham. And then when we got to Waltham, we then marched about 2 miles to this airport, which was Grimsby Civilian Airport, known as Waltham. And we duly were placed in huts there, and we awaited what our fate would be. Well, our fate, in fact, was to, for about 6 months, was digging trenches and slit trenches and putting up barbed wire and generally making ourselves useful. It was there that I started my physical training. I used to get the men on parade, and you know, not one of them ever queried it. They never said, "You're only over any private," or anything like that. I told them to go on parade, and they went on parade. And I went, I used to swat upon these exercises at night and went through them and sort of a sequence, and everybody did what they were told. And then we had what was, I decided to institute what was known as all-in football, where you could pick up the ball if you liked, you could kick it if you liked, you could kick the other bloke if you liked, and that was went off very well, actually. We used to do it on a big asphalt square, which had been part of the old aerodrome. And it was then that we got so hungry, we used to come in for tea time and be presented with two slices of dry bread and some tinned herring, things of that sort, that glowed in the dark. And we were literally, we felt as if we were starving. Now the strange thing is that, I don't know whether Wally Binson managed a fellow called George Dove. George Dove was a cook there, and he now keeps a pub in Nottingham where we have our reunions. And it wasn't until of recent years, he said to somebody who came in the pub, he said, "This chappie and I were in the army together, and you know, we used to get more rations for them because they were young soldiers." He was only our age, mind you. "Well, we never," I said, "I never knew that." "Oh," he said, "oh yes, you got more rations because you were young soldiers. You got," and we were absolutely starving, and I'm damn sure the stuff went home. Anyway, I realised that eventually, because the officer whose name escapes me, I know there was one called Cuttermole, and this other one, I'll probably go written down somewhere, said to me, "Would you like to be a company clerk for a week while the clerk goes on holiday, on leave?" So I said, "Yes, sir." So I went to the company office, and I said, "What do I do about meals?" "Oh," he said, "go yourself, go to the cookhouse at the back, help yourself there whenever you want to go, as long as it's meal times, and you need to go to the dining hall and get it yourself." So I went down there to the cookhouse, and it was amazing, the food. I've never seen so much food in my life. And there was bacon and fried bread and things floating around, and all these blokes were stuffing themselves, but nothing seemed to be going outside. So for a week, I had the most tremendous amount of food I've ever had. There was bacon and eggs and everything. And it was whilst I was there that he said, "Have you ever thought of putting in for a commission?" So I said, "No, sir." "Well," he said, "I think you could do quite well." He said, "Shall I recommend you?" So I said, "Yes, sir." And I didn't really know what to say. It just seemed to be a natural thing. He'd said, I mean, I at that time I hadn't even got a first stripe, and I'd asked him about that, and he said, "Well, there's nothing I can do," sort of thing, "but we'll put your name forward for a commission." And I was then sent on an NCO's course back to Nottingham, to Bestwood Lodge, where I met Wally Binch for the first time. And in the meantime, friends of mine who had been in Nottingham and hadn't gone to Grimsby, one was Ken Allen, who is now, he became Colonel of the 1st Battalion after the war. One was Ken Allen, and one or two other of my friends, they'd all got Lance Corporal Stripes.